The hearing on, for the, like, open the committee on House Business and Labor for the 21st of March, 2013. And I would like to open up the hearing on House Bill 2007 and 2008, public hearing. And what we're going to do is we're going to open both of these. Speaker Kotek's going to speak on them, and then we'll close one and then open it again. So we'll be dealing with them on separately. Thank you, Speaker Kotek. If you could have a summary of the bill, please.
Committee members, Madam Chair, we have House Bill 2007. This deems establishment of lottery game retailer or applicant to be a casino when 50% or more of net income of the establishment is or projected to be derived from sale of tickets or shares in lottery games. We also have House Bill 2008, which allows the city to order a temporary cessation of alcoholic beverage sales or other operations as specified by the OLCC licensed premises upon reasonable belief that continued sales or operation are an immediate threat to public safety. It allows the OLCC to place restrictions on activities at licensed premises if the commission has grounds to believe that certain conditions exist. Allows the OLCC to refuse or revoke a license if a reasonable belief that the license poses a threat to public safety. It requires that one member of the OLCC have experience in law enforcement or public safety, declares an emergency effective on passage.
Okay, thank you. Speaker Kotek, welcome to our committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. It's a blustery day. Nice to see you bright and early.
First day of spring.
Yes,
what a start.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify on both bills. I have constituents here today, and I'll speak on both. My testimony is coming. I think we're emailing it and bringing down hard copies. But let me start with House Bill 2007. Actually, both of these bills are introduced on behalf of my district, my neighbors on Hayden Island. Hayden Island is that island before you go into Vancouver. I think many of you know that. Jansen Beach is located. And we have some issues on the island. But these bills are also the result of some long-term work about dealing with problem bars and taverns and establishments that affect public safety and community livability. House Bill 2007 is about lottery retailers and the definition of a casino. You know, when voters approved in the Oregon Constitution the ability for Oregon to have lottery games, I don't think any of us or any of those voters thought that they would have casinos in their neighborhoods. Casinos meaning establishments that really their primary reason for being is for people to play the lottery. Might have some food, might have some cheap drinks and buy some cheap cigarettes, but essentially you go there to play lottery. And I think we have these establishments all over the state, just not in my district. And as I've examined that issue, how do you deal with that? How do you address that issue? And, you know, in our research, we have found that the Oregon Lottery Commission, by administrative rule, monitors the gross revenue of these establishments. And the more we looked at that, and the more we looked at the information that was being collected, the more concerned we were that we really didn't have a good idea of what these establishments were doing in terms of their lottery activities. And so this bill says, let's define what a casino is in statute. Let's say that, and I'm open to other suggestions, but the starting point is, if you're making more than half of your profit, not just your gross revenue, but your net profit from lottery sales, then you're a casino. And we should address that and say, you need to change your business model to be something other than that, something that actually provides more to the community than just a place to go play lottery, maybe some better food, maybe other things. It doesn't say these establishments have to go out of business, but I don't think anyone said we should have casinos, you know, all over our communities for people to play lottery. There are a lot of good establishments in our communities who there are restaurants or bars that people hang out in, there's music, there are things to do there, and they have lottery. It's a part of their business model. It's not their entire business model. Because what you see on Hayden Island, we have this place on Hayden Island called Lottery Row. There are 12 establishments there. They have to have a liquor license to be a lottery retailer. There's a concentration of them, and that concentration, for a variety of reasons, has caused an increase in crime on the island. And there will be some proposals from maybe today from my constituents who say, well, how do we deal with this? Maybe we deal with it by, you know, limiting saturation of these licenses. The challenge with that is how do you determine which retailer should be there or not? You know, we've had retailers who've been there for a while, and maybe we don't like to have that many retailers all concentrated, but how do you choose which one should leave if you have a saturation rule? So it seemed like a better approach would be to say the retailers to have the privilege of being a lottery retailer and the privilege of having a liquor license, that you should be an establishment that's not a casino, that you actually provide something other than lottery games in the community. So that's what you see in this bill in House Bill 2007, an attempt to say, what do we want these retailers to be? Do we want casinos? Because that's what we have now in a lot of our communities. We have retailers that's all they do, pretty much, is make money from lottery. And because of the cheap booze and cheap cigarettes that they sell to manage out the rest of their gross revenue, it leads to, you know, on Hayden Island, we lead to issues of drug dealing and crime that are related to, I think, the alcohol sales and the concentration of establishments that really don't offer anything else. And so you see bad behavior resulting from this concentration. So House Bill 2007 is an attempt to say, what kind of establishments do we want our community? Who do lottery? And I think we have a lot of good actors in the community. Bars and taverns said that is a part of their business model. It just shouldn't be their entire business model. House Bill 2008, shifting to the other bill, deals with problem bars and taverns. This is actually some work. I've been working on this issue since I've been in the legislature, and been frustrated over the years with the inability of the Liquor Control Commission to actually have more of an effect on establishments that do cause public safety and community livability issues. So in 2000, and this is also introduced on behalf of Hayden Island, because we have seen an increase in crime. There'll be some information in my testimony about that increase in crime reports. And again, the OLCC there is there to balance sale of liquor and also public safety issues. And so in this bill, you have three things. The first part is saying if you have some very serious, egregious incidents happening at a bar or tavern, that a local law enforcement would have the ability to suspend a liquor license for 72 hours for the purpose of public safety. The second section, which in some ways is the more important section, the portion about how do you define a serious and persistent problem, what we've heard is that, and I've seen some of the police reports from Hayden Island about how many reports of problems have happened and how slow the response is. At some point, we have to say that's a serious and persistent problem. And what we heard from the restaurant industry is that, we don't want to unfairly target people, but we have had inconsistent rules from OLCC of what actually you define that. So we actually put the things in the bill and said, well, other states have done this. If you have this kind of problem and this number of problems, then you have a serious or persistent problem. So we're just trying to give the OLCC more tools. And then lastly, it asked for the OLCC to have someone with public safety background on the commission. Right now, there are five members. There's one designated spot. It's someone from the liquor retail industry. So this bill would say we should also have a designated spot on the five-member commission for someone with a public safety background so you can balance the regulation as well as the public safety issues. So there's a lot in these bills. You're going to hear from people today, pro and con, about them. I hope you'll give them due consideration. I know you will. Look forward to coming back. Happy to answer questions. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Kotek. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Speaker Kotek, I'm just going through this and I'm thinking about it and listening to your testimony and everything. And I'm wondering if we're not avoiding maybe a bigger problem and just the lack of funding that we're putting into our police departments to actually take care of the people that are out there doing the damage, that are stealing and taking care of the issue that is really at hand. And these are some bad people that are out there, period. And I don't know if we'll stop them with this. They might go someplace else. So did that conversation ever come up, or were there any thoughts or ideas around that?
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, thank you for the question. We have had some very interesting discussions with law enforcement. I'm actually very pleased with the response that Portland Police has paid to the problems on Hayden Island. Commander Leloff, in particular, who works in North Portland, has been amazing in trying to work with the retailers, suggesting they put up security cameras, really trying to say, look, you need to clean up what you're doing on the island. We've had walk-arounds, and some of my staff have gone on these with both Director Niswender from the Lottery Commission and enforcement agents from the OLCC walking around. It's been very interesting because my constituents come to me and say, You as the state have a role here. You've given them a liquor license, and you can't operate as a lottery retailer without a liquor license, so who's in charge here? And we've had a little bit of this finger-pointing going on. It's like, no, it's their problem, it's their problem. It's like, well, whose problem is it? OLCC gives them the license, the lottery commission lets them have lottery, and we have a problem. So I actually think, in our particular case, law enforcement has been very responsive, but they can only keep reporting and reporting and reporting, and unless the OLCC either takes a license away or the lottery takes a license away, we will continue to have these problems. So I was with you. I'm like, let's talk about this from a law enforcement perspective. We're actually getting good response. We're not getting what we need from the state, unfortunately.
Thank you. Representative Thompson and Representative Kinnaman.
You know, we dealt with this last session in another way in human services. And the problem is much bigger than just Hayden Island. And it goes back to the situation where we established the lottery. We gave them the instructions to maximize their profits. It's in their goals. And then when these things happen, we come back and try to find somebody to blame. The blame is right here in this building. We are addicted to gambling in Oregon. And every time the question comes up about reducing this income, the lid comes off around here because we need that lottery revenue like heroin addicts need heroin, because that's how we balance the budget and do all these good things. The result of the lottery system we built is Hayden Island and some situations in my district that are exactly like it. And you know, I can't fault the lottery for establishing these mini casinos. We told them to do it, and then we relish in the profit we're making off of these. And everybody goes wink, wink that this probably isn't a problem. It's an enormous problem. And you're right. These are not eating establishments, nor are they bars. I mean, requiring to have a liquor license only makes the problem worse. We may as well just say, let's set up mini casinos, and all they have to do is have a whole bunch of lottery machines and return obscene profits to the state of Oregon, because that's what we really want, is money from these. And I think we really need to look at this whole problem statewide, and you just hit a symptom of it with what's going on in Hayden Island. But I don't know how we back out of it, because we went into this with our eyes open, and we've been spending the money like drunken sailors, and now we're trying to figure out how to make it look better but still get the money. And
Madam Chair, Representative Thompson, two quick comments is, in case you don't realize, the reason that you have a liquor license is that helps control the age limit for someone who plays the lottery. Because I had that very, well, why do they need a liquor license? Well, it's, if you have a liquor license, then you assume you're having people who are of age to drink who are there, which is the same age range for, to play the lottery. On what you might hear also from opponents of this, particularly the casino bill, is this is going to cost the state a lot of money. I don't think we actually know how much it's going to cost in terms of reduced lottery revenue. I think the information the Lottery Commission is collecting now around gross revenue is spotty at best. I think it's instructive to a point, but I don't think anybody really knows how many folks are operating over, you know, this profit level. And it might be 5% of their profit, it might be 10% of their profit, it might be 90%. We just have no idea. And so I think it would be very hard to pinpoint what it would actually do to our lottery revenue intake here in the state.
Okay, Representative Kinnamer.
I think just, again, a comment that Representative Thompson has said it well. We've been struggling with this issue of these retailers in our communities and their impact. The other thing that's interesting to me is we've been struggling with casinos, and we've kind of created something of a policy, and I just must commend you for coming up with a creative angle on that.
Thank you.
Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to make sure that when you say that we don't know, I agree with you. I don't think we necessarily can know. And I guess my concern is that I don't want to dismiss that not everybody's lottery row. and we have some very nice small little cafes out there that might have six machines in the back that are operating a business and doing well in their small community, and they don't serve a lot of meals. I know one in particular that's a breakfast and lunch only. It's her and two employees, and that's it. And I just don't know what their gross receipts are or what their net proceeds would be at the end of the day, and I would sure hate to put them out of business because I know that's not what we're trying to do. So I appreciate you bringing it forward, and I know there's more work to be done, but that's in my mind right now about not the large chains, not the Lottery Row, but the very small business that, you know, quite honestly, may have introduced lottery to keep themselves afloat for a while. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that we're not going to impact those folks.
And Madam Chair and Representative Matthews, I would agree with that, and I think this bill is a starting point for discussion. I would hope the Chair would entertain establishing a work group to address those issues. There could be a waiver process. It could say, come and make the case of why you might need to have more of your profit because of where you're located or the nature of your business. Because I think these other businesses that we're mostly talking about really have no justification other than to make a lot of money off a lottery.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, the Speaker? Thank you, Speaker Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, colleagues.
And I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2007 and 2008 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2007. Okay, we're going to be bringing you up in panels, and with everyone, just we have a lot of speakers today, even though we don't have a lot of bills to deal with today. But if you have written testimony, please summarize your testimony, and we're going to be kind of keeping an eye on time and so on. And if somebody has said the same thing over and over again, please just bring up your materials. And thank you this morning for braving the weather to come down here. So we'd like to call up Tracy Chapman Roy, Jeff Geisler, and Ron Schmidt. And before your testimony, if you could make sure you identify yourself for the record. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you very much. Representatives, thank you for your time this morning. My name is Ron Schmidt, and I'm a resident of Hayden Island. I'm also the chair of High Noon, which is the Hayden Island Neighborhood Network, which is the City of Portland authorized neighborhood association on Hayden Island. I'm also a member of the North Portland Neighborhood Chairs Network, which comprises 11 neighborhood associations in North Portland and around 40,000 residents in the North Portland area. High Noon, on behalf of the citizens of North Portland and specifically Hayden Island, supports HB 2007, and we urge you to pass it. The North Portland Neighborhood Chairs Network, representing the over 40,000 residents, also supports us in this cause on the Lottery Row issues. As a side note, I was interested to find out that this is not a problem just for Hayden Island, although that has been our focus, but the other neighborhood chairs have indicated that this profit mentality or model apparently has worked so well on Hayden Island that it is spreading to other neighborhoods, including theirs, and I'm certain we're going to see it more across the state. That there's a certain synergy that occurs when you have multiple lottery bars together. Our community itself of over 2,000 residents and hundreds of businesses has been sorely affected by this perfect storm of outside influences. We're going to have speakers from the island later on today that are going to talk about other state influences such as the Columbia River crossings, the Port of Portland with West Hayden Island, and other issues that really are not neighborhood issues but are state or interstate issues that have really affected us. And we think that there are some issues that are cross-platform. We really believe that if you go back into the history of Hayden Island, that Hayden Island really could be a beautiful entry into the city of Portland and into the state of Oregon. It could be a very nautical marine environment for people to enjoy, recreate, and live. But instead, we've been filled with crime to the level of almost a border town mentality. We've seen out-of-state gambling operators. In fact, one of the bigger ones is from Las Vegas, Nevada, and others come into our neighborhood and take our only community retail core operation. If you know the island at all, the center of the island itself has a major regional retail center, that being the Jansen Beach Mall, and that really is regional in nature. In fact, because of the tax issues, a lot of Vancouverites come over to do their shopping without the sales tax. We have a lot of neighborhood areas. In fact, our neighborhood association is unique in the entire city of Portland in that we are a representative form of government. We have homeowner associations that select their candidate to be on our board rather than a popular election. But when it comes to the retail core, that is what we call today Lottery Row. And all of the retail establishments, all of the retail establishments have been pushed out where there is no more video stores or no more floral stores. Every retail establishment there has a liquor license. In the case of Denny's, who moved right across the street, they have no intention of using the liquor license, but to have the lottery machines, just like what they do at the convention center. They have a bar, they have a liquor license, they have one bottle of beer, the regional manager tells me. They don't sell any alcohol there if they want the lottery. We have seen, because of Lottery Row and the impact, we have seen crime overall go down on the island, yet the statistics that the Portland police have given us have indicated that within 1,000 feet of Lottery Row itself, that crime has gone up over 40%. So overall, community-wide, crime is down, yet the net result, if you look at Lottery Row itself, is a 40% increase. There had been a lot of pushback, a lot of argument on the statistics historically. We've seen that the opposition is not really arguing those points anymore. We may hear that to be a little different this morning. We've had these operators of these Lottery Row bars actually appear at our high noon meetings, and they appear with high-profile attorneys. They appear with high-profile PR and political people, and I'm certain we'll probably see them today. Please keep in mind that we are volunteers. We're taking time off from our businesses, from our lives to come and testify in front of you. We don't have the budget, we don't have the money, we're speaking directly from our hearts. Please keep in mind too that of all the people behind us, there are thousands of residents on the island who could not make the trip today because of economics, and we hope that they will write in to you. As a business person myself who founded a company in Oregon, I know that revenues may be a good measurement for my business compared to a business in my industry. But the only reason that any business person forms a business is the bottom line, the net profit. And for us to look at revenues as a indication of what this business is, really is not a good measuring stick at all. If you want to find out truly what a business is, find out where's the money coming from, where is the profit, what is the bottom line of that business. In fact, we believe that looking at the revenue approach has actually caused part of the problem, because right now under the current system, they have to make certain that their gaming or gambling revenues are under 50%, otherwise they will be defined as a casino. As a result, we believe that that's why we have the cheapest cigarettes in the Portland area, certainly a whole lot cheaper than Vancouver, and we believe that's why the alcohol is being served so inexpensively, is to protect that 49% revenue on the gambling side. They want those revenues and they want the pure profits that come out of them. We believe a lot of the problems come out of the environment that's caused by the cheap cigarettes, cheap alcohol that is being served. We hope that through the passage of this bill that we can eliminate the actual games that are being played with revenue. we hope that we can support the legitimate businesses out there. I've mentioned many times that the founding of our country and the organization of our country was done in taverns and bars, and that's, we're not trying to eliminate those taverns and bars, but we want to make certain that they are more than life support systems for lottery machines. We hope that we can support those legitimate businesses like Denny's on our island, who tells me that only 17% of their revenues are coming from gambling revenues, not 49, not 50%. And we hope that we can support the small business rather than the large Las Vegas operations that are pulling the profits out of our state today. We do believe that we need to have an equal playing field for those small businesses, but please, please help us clean up our environment by this artificial support of a revenue concept that's causing the environment that causes the crime today on Hayden Island, and from what my neighborhood chairs say, is spreading to other parts of the country or state as well. Thank you very much for your time this morning, and we look forward to working with you. Any questions, I'd be glad to take them. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll wait till the panel finishes, and we'll open it up for questions after that. Right. Sir?
Hi, I'm Jeff Geisler. I live on Hayden Island, and I am one of the co-founders of Stop Lottery Row. I'm also on the High Noon Board, which is the Hayden Island Neighborhood Network, and also a pro-business member of the Hayden Island Business Alliance. I can't add too much since my long-winded friend here pretty well covered
it all for you.
He did a good job.
Good job. But I do agree that Tina Kotek has come up with a good solution, and I definitely agree with Representative Thompson that it's a interesting situation that we've gotten into. I mean, the addiction to gambling has many social consequences, and also one of them is that generates a lot of revenue for the state. And at this time, we obviously know that we need a lot of revenue. What I would only recommend on this House bill is that there's a maybe a clause added for us to control this self-audit that I think that the bars basically are doing now. They submit their audit information, and it seems like everybody's at 49-51%. So if there could be a clause added, say a random audit clause as sort of a threat, that, you know, you never know when you're going to have to prove your revenues. But I think that might be a way to demonstrate the 50% rule. And also, it could be an encouragement for these businesses to become legitimate. I do have a history. When I was younger, I was an assistant manager for the old spaghetti factory. I know the restaurant industry. These delis could serve good food. They could become legitimate if they were encouraged to. So, again, that's my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hello, good morning, and thank you for this morning. My name is Tracy Chapman Roy. I'm a resident of Hayden Island and also a board member of High Noon. And I'd like to come before you today because my family and I wanted to move to the island because we love the area. We love nature. We love the river. We wanted to have a wonderful community in which to raise our kids. We have a large family and teenagers and 12-year-olds we didn't realize when we moved on the island that there were business community issues such as this. And two of our teenage daughters have acquired jobs on the island at different, one at a shopping or a grocery store, one at a restaurant. And at the time that they started working, they were not of driving age. And so when they would get out from work rather late at night, they would walk home. And on one particular occasion, my daughter called me crying. She was scared. There was a man who was following her, and he came directly from Lottery Row, and he was chasing her. And I thought to myself, is this a mistake that we moved here? Is this the kind of environment that my children are going to grow up with? Are these the kind of memories that I want my children to have, looking back at their childhood, that they had to run home from work? I don't want to think that moving to this island was a mistake, and the other residents of the island that they'd walk to the grocery store or walk to Starbucks, they fear walking there. It's not a good place to walk by. When people come out of those establishments, they have had way too much to drink. They're staggering around. They've been passed out in the lawn. There's been drug deals that are going on. These are the kind of environment that my family is exposed to. I would just desperately ask you to take a look at taking action on these so that younger families that are moving into the area don't have to be exposed to this, and the other citizens of the island as well. We have a lot of senior citizens that do a lot of walking as well, and we're just waiting for something to happen, and we don't want something desperate to happen, a murder, a rape, stabbing, because people are coming out of there with their judgment impaired, and fights are happening all the time. So, thank you for your time
this morning. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Are there any questions of the panelists? Representative Witt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I recognize that this bill is an effort to clear up the kinds of problems that none of us would ever want to see happening in any of our neighborhoods. But I'm wondering if you would allow that in many rural areas of our state, we may not have the critical mass of population that enables a lot of bars to be able to maintain the majority of their profits coming from the sale of food. That certainly would be problematic for many bars in my district, and I suspect I'm not different than a lot of other rural areas. And I'm wondering if you have given any thought to how we address the concerns and problems that you've expressed, and perhaps not impose an undue financial and adverse burden in many of our rural areas.
Representative Witt, thank you for your question. I'm an Iowa farm boy, but I've been here for 27 years, so I think I'm now a native Oregonian. My hometown was the largest town in the county at 3,000 people, so therefore it was the county seat. My heart goes to the rural areas. Obviously, our concerns are those concerns that we have right in front of us, yes. And they have been unique. I think being the first exit on I-5 south of Vancouver does cause its own problems there. As I indicated earlier, I was surprised to hear from fellow chairs throughout the metropolitan area that they're seeing this happen as well. And certainly, my heart goes out to a small business trying to thrive in a low population area. It might be that maybe we share the wealth for what few businesses are out there and look at the 6-machine limit instead of making one large casino. Maybe give every business the opportunity of having 1 or 2 machines in the rural areas. I think there's different ways to look at it. Maybe, as Representative Kotek said, is maybe we make exceptions. I think there's a there may be a little critical mass that goes on in an urban area too, where you get multiple bars together. I don't know, but certainly this is the start of a good conversation. It's a horrible, horrendous problem. I believe that can be fixed by good legislation in terms of fixing the problem. The big issue is, what is the beast? Are we giving birth to life support systems for lottery machines for profiteers that are pure casinos, or are we trying to help small Oregon businesses survive and also bring the revenues to the state? I think if we get away from the model we have today, there's a way that we can continue the revenues into the state without dropping lottery revenues. We can support small legitimate businesses that are struggling to provide a product and service to the community, whether it be food, entertainment, or whatever. But I invite any and all of you to come up to Hayden Island and find any justification other than lottery for some of these bars, because there is none.
Okay, thank you. A follow-up, and then Kenner and White.
Madam Chair, just a comment here. Speaker Kotek mentioned the potential work group. I would be interested in that. Mm-hmm. I want these problems stopped. And I think, too, if we have drug deals going on, people passed out on lawns, people following innocent children, home, that we ought maybe to be thinking about three strikes and you're out and you've lost your license in order to be able to have gaming machines in your establishment. So, yeah.
Thank you. Representative Kinnemer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just, I think one is the local neighborhood problem. Another large problem of the lottery is we have 71,000 estimated Oregonians that are addicted to video poker. Or video lottery, Oregon video lottery. 85% of the gambling addicts in this state are addicted to Oregon video games. So there are several facets of this problem, and I think as Representative Witt talks about finding the balance, we need to look at some balance here. This thing is way out of control. Multiply the number of family members times 71,000, you come up with an astronomical number of families that are being bankrupted and destroyed.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
Madam Chair, I'm going to kind of fall back to law enforcement, because after listening to your testimony, and I don't think Speaker Kotek lives on the Hayden Island, but it doesn't sound like they're doing the job if things are happening. You have people passing out on lawns, drug deals going down. I know in my communities we have a problem establishment. You're going to see a lot of police that start sitting around there, and everybody walks out of that bar and gets in a car. Guess what? They'll be pulled over. I mean, I've had people who've complained because the police are trying to destroy their business. No, they're trying to make sure people get home safely and other people aren't hurt. So would you say it's adequate law enforcement on your island, or are you getting shortchanged?
She wants to respond, but I'm the safety chair for High Noon, and I've spent 2 years on this problem. We definitely have the best police, really. They have done everything and way beyond really their salary or the amount of dollars that are committed to the number of officers that we are supposed to have on the island. Mike Leloff spent 7 months with these the lottery row, as they call them, trying to do a good neighborhood agreement, and that never came to fruition. They never agreed to having the terms of the good neighborhood agreement, and so only in the last, I'd say, 4 months has the police department been able to basically do time, place, and manner, and they are doing an excellent job. We don't know the full extent of the law, the different felonies that they have convictions coming. We know of 26. I don't know if there's many more, but I don't think it's a law enforcement problem on Hayden Island. The bars have stepped up and have security, but you know, the one owner that has six bars testified at the last High Noon meeting that, you know, it's really not my patrons. They're not really causing any problem. It's the vagrants. And then another owner who has three bars stood up and said, I want to get off the island. I know that you have a serious problem, you know, and he capitulated. So it's tough to say it's a police problem at this point, because the police have really sort of had their hand held for some time trying to do the good neighborhood agreement. But I think they're working very well now.
My comment would be, do you have enough police?
If we can
police?
Speed it up, we're going to have to
speed up the hearing. We've got a lot of people to speak, and we've got about another 10 minutes for you to do it.
So 30 seconds, Chair, if I could.
And then you can follow up.
Thank you very much. Representative, law enforcement is a critical element when there is a problem. There should have never been a problem here. It had the OLCC and the lottery done their jobs of enforcing with what laws they have. City of Portland has put two police officers on this. That's far beyond the budget of any city for a specific problem, when in fact it's state laws that cause the problems. Maybe there should be funding from the lottery for law enforcement in those problem areas. I do want to stress that the OLCC and the Oregon Lottery directors have come to the island 10 o'clock at night for walkthroughs at the times that we thought were the problem times, but only after a lot of time, a lot of problems, and a lot of violence on the island have they stepped up. They never have used the enforcement tools that they have available today. We need your help.
Thank you. Do you have another follow-up question?
No. Okay. For me, it's budgetary. I mean, because in the towns in my district, we deal with this in a different manner. I mean, people are scared to come out of the establishments and get in a vehicle and drive or do anything because they know the cops are sitting right outside. Two cops for Hayden Island doesn't sound like enough to me.
How many establishments do you have?
So, well, we have McMinnville, Yamhill, Carlton, I mean, okay.
If we could move on with this. Representative Thompson had a question.
I was just going to say, I would support Representative Witt's suggestion of forming a work group on this. I think we need to also look at the connection between alcohol and the casinos. I'm not buying the argument that you need to have a liquor permit in order to be able to tell who's 21 and who's not. I can card somebody for gambling purposes as easily as I can card them for alcohol. So maybe some of these problems are interconnected in a way that need to be looked at differently.
Thank you very much. Do you have any other questions? Thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you.
Can we call up Bill Perry and Mike Mills? And we're going to have to finish this panel, this topic by 9 o'clock, or we will not be able to get through the other two issues. So if you could be brief in your comments, if you have written testimony.
Yep.
Thank you, sir.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, Bill Perry at the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. I've got my written testimony coming around, but I do want to kind of touch on a few of the comments that came up earlier. Hayden Island is a very unique circumstance of a lot of things coming together, but as Representative Witt and Representative Matthews have pointed out, there's a border issue here. When you look at, they talked about cheap cigarettes. Okay, cigarettes are $1.87 a pack cheaper in Oregon than they are in Washington. So people drive across the border today to save $20 on a carton of cigarettes. In my testimony, I've attached what has happened to liquor sales in Oregon on all the border stores since the passage of what it was, $11.87 or $11.83 in Washington. Sales obviously have gone up almost 50% on the Hayden Island store. I think there was the biggest one might be in Representative Woods' district at 60% in Rainier. So you have, and they also, when you talk about Jansen Beach, that's sales tax. People are coming across the border for tax purposes. Now, so it's happening all across the border, not just in Hayden Island. The problem with Hayden Island is Columbia River Crossing. When you look at those stores that are right next to the freeway, if you've got any sort of a business that needs a 5 to 6 plan to get a return on your investment, nobody's going to loan you money. You cannot get a loan to open up a business unless you can get a quicker return on your investment. I'm not saying I like it or I don't like it, but it's just a very, very unique circumstance. Now, on Hayden Island, you heard a couple, Denny's and the Convention Center. There are several retailers right now that have 3 drink maximums. They don't let you have more than 3 drinks in your establishment because they're trying to control the problem. Now, what happens if you pass this bill? They're probably going to have to lift those maximums. You know, there are, everybody I think would like to find a way to fix this problem, but every time you try to put a restriction on a business, it's going to come from someplace else. And the problem is there's a lot of very unique factors that around alcohol, tobacco, and other factors that are basically creating this market shift. And it's why La Center Casino has been popular. It's why the Cascade Locks and the one that we had on the ballot. Everybody's trying to move towards that area for market forces. Nothing else. They're market forces. And I think sometimes if you start looking at trying to, when they say net profits, I mean, what does net profits mean? We're all going to have a different, you know, I think you're going to encourage more alcohol sales, more cigarette sales, some of these different things by doing this. I would say build Columbia River Crossing, you wipe out the problem. It's not always that easy. But you also, at the same token, you pull a plug on Columbia River Crossing, you solve part of the problems. Because then somebody can build a different type of a business that long-term might be able to make it. But we've just got a bunch of unique circumstances that are going on here. The lottery has passed a rule that's going to close down six of those establishments at the end of the contract. And I would say the police are doing a great job on Hayden Island. There are still problems, but as you heard in previous testimony, crime problems are down 40%. Now, 40% of high rates is still high. I mean, they need to be worked on. But there's a unique set of circumstances that is happening here to make this a bigger problem. But there's border issues that are going to impact a lot more businesses all the way up and down the Columbia. So with that, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Mr. Mills.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Daugherty and members of the committee. I'm Michael Mills. I'm a lawyer in private practice in Oregon since 1972. And for the last 10 or 15 years, the majority of my practice has been representing restaurants, bars, taverns in the Oregon tourism and entertainment industry. And I probably have close to 100 clients presently who have both lottery contracts and OLCC licenses. The problem with this bill is that I perceive it as you're trying to force a Hayden Island solution onto the statewide lottery system. A bar owner, a tavern owner, a lottery retailer does not have any control over who comes into his establishment and plays the lottery, nor does he have any control over how much they put into the machines. He doesn't have any control over how much they eat or how much they drink. So he's pretty much at the mercy of the lottery player who happens to be, whether it's in a rural area or in an area such as Hayden Island. They come in, they do what the law allows them to do, and to adjust your percentages to a certain percentage, I don't think is feasible because really you don't have any control over it. There's a Attorney General opinion in 1987 which indicates that you have to be very careful as a legislature into legislating any bill or provision that interferes with the Lottery Commission's operation of the lottery. And the lottery has set up this system that the retailers have signed on to. They built their business model around it. They are running their business according to the OLCC rules, the lottery rules, and any other local rules. And to suddenly force a artificial restraint on how much they can derive from lottery profits, I think would put I think more than you would realize out of business, or cause them to, they can't close down the lottery machines early because the lottery doesn't allow them to. All they can do is close their doors earlier so that they aren't open for business. So I think it would have a big problem. I happen to represent, so that you know where I'm coming from, I happen to represent four of the lottery retailers on Hayden Island. And I have to tell you that none of them are out of state. None of them are from Las Vegas. All of them are family-owned and family-run businesses. One of them, the daughter is running the operation because the mother is very ill. They are your typical Oregon business persons. I also heard reference to problem bars and problem taverns. I take exception to that. There are a few, but the problem in Hayden Island is problem customers, and it's what Bill referred to, is you come across to get cheap cigarettes, maybe you stop and play, etc., But there are other criminal elements who are attracted to that type of high density, and they come in with the drugs, and they come in and drink too much and stagger outside. And I have a tremendous amount of sympathy for the type of experience that the young lady recounted that she went through. But that was a problem customer, not a problem bar or tavern. I believe that this can be handled. Bill mentioned the rules and regulations by the lottery. I know of two businesses which will be gone in June on Hayden Island. I know because of lease problems they have, or lease issues with renewing their lease. I know another one that I've heard that I don't represent that is closing their doors because of, and I don't even know what their problems are. And the new lottery rules will not allow a concentration of lottery retailers as we have had on Hayden Island. So I think Hayden Island's unique. It should not be, its solution should not be grafted on to the statewide purpose. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It again, more of a comment, if you will, than a question. It just appears to me that given the uncertainty with the I-5 corridor in that neighborhood, that unless and until perhaps that area is designated a development zone and we offer tax credits, tax abatements for higher-end businesses to be able to move in there, maybe the higher-end restaurants, that this may continue to be a problem. And as the business committee, I think there's tremendous potential here. We've heard a lot of problems, but I think the flip side of that coin is there's tremendous potential here. And as many of the neighbors have testified, this is an area that's located close to the river and has the potential for a lot of other amenities. And I think our state should take a look at this. It's a prime opportunity here for development.
Okay, thank you. Any other quick questions? Because we are going to have to wrap up this part in about another 8 minutes. So if we could call up, thank you very much for testifying. Dave Jackson, Charles Kuffner, and then we have two more people after that, three more people after that. So you've got about a minute and a half of testimony. Thank you. If you could start right away, please.
My name is Charles Kuffner. I'm a resident of Hayden Island, and I've been a resident of Hayden Island for the last 14 years. I submitted in my written testimony a little bit of history, and I think you ought to put this whole matter into context. Hayden Island is really not the problem. The problem is the concentration and the saturation allowed by OLCC and OLS to put 10 casinos in a space of about 15,000 square feet. They created a criminal culture. We on Hayden Island, working with the Portland Police Department, and we are grateful for Representative Kotek using the logic and the input from High Noon, the police department, and Stop Lottery Row, amongst others. The common sense approach, I spent 14 years in the criminal justice system in New York, and I know firsthand that a well-informed police department is your best criterion for whether or not in Hayden Island or the state of Oregon has a particular premise been violating drug laws, for example. They can then act as any other health inspector would be able to close a place down. And the proof of that pudding is, since 2008, the Oregon OLCC has an enforcement arm, but they were more concerned with checking IDs with bartenders than they were checking on drug deals taking place within premises. However, the Portland Police Department in 1 month did a sting operation on Hayden Island at Lottery Row and resulted in 26 felony indictments. Where was OLCC? Who created the culture? The culture was created by the OLCC and the Lottery Commission allowing saturation, concentration, and no enforcement. They created the culture, they created the monster, and we don't want to put anybody out of business. What we want to do is try to get Hayden Island back to a place to live, visit, and recreate, and shop, and we want to hope that you legislators will then apply what you do in Hayden Island to protect other communities in the state of Oregon. This should have never, ever happened. And I'll give you just one personal anecdote and then I'm finished. When I moved here, I retired. I have a small pension from New York State and I have Social Security. That's my income. My biggest investment was my home, which I pay, which was $240,000 in 2000. The last time I got a bill from the assessor's office in Multnomah County, it was valued at $189,000, which means I am underwater. And I don't say that it's only Lottery Row that did it, but if anybody's going to buy in Hayden Island, if they do due diligence, they're going to find that that place over there is going to affect the ultimate marketability of their premise.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, sir. Next.
Good morning, Chair Doherty and members of the House and Business Labor
Sir,
Committee.
Sir, would you like to push the microphone up, too? Thank you.
I am Officer David Jackson from the Portland Police Bureau's Drugs and Vice Division. I'm here to testify on the City of Portland's behalf in favor of House Bill 2007. Prior to my current assignment, I worked as the District Officer on Hayden Island for nearly 3 years. During that time, I saw firsthand what happens when a group of businesses come together with the motivation of profit from Oregon Lottery products. The cluster of lottery retailers I observed, which are sometimes referred to as Lottery Row, is comprised of 12 locations owned by 4 different businesses with approximately 72 video lottery terminals between all those businesses. I have observed as the number of lottery retailers have increased, so has the amount of police calls for service and the number of neighborhood complaints related to that location. Numerous bureaus from the City of Portland have been working closely with the OLCC, the Oregon State Lottery, to address these problems. These problems have included the purchase and sale of illegal narcotics, driving under the influence of intoxicants, disorderly conduct, and permitting minors on the premise. Possession and distribution of illegal narcotics has been documented at nearly every location on Lottery Row, and some of these instances have been with the direct knowledge or participation of the employees at these locations. House Bill 2007 is a positive step for communities affected by these types of establishments. By defining what a casino is, it encourages businesses to diversify their sources of income, which will alleviate the public safety and livability impacts in our communities. Thank you for your time. I'm available to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Do you have questions, please? Quickly, please.
Real quick, for the officer. You ran one sting operation, got busted 26 people. This is the way I'm understanding it?
Correct. Between the numbers I had seen was between September and December of 2012. I believe they ended up with right around 60 different custody arrests up on Jansen Beach. Okay. Just
so
on.
If you probably ran a sting operation twice a month, do you think people would stop going down to Lottery Row for bad behavior?
Because they wouldn't want to get busted? They've been running the Representative Widener, they've been running the sting up there from September up until present. They run it when we can. Our resources are very limited to dedicate that much resources up to one small community in our precinct. Jansen Beach, we have a day shift officer. We have 2 afternoon shift officers. We have 1 night shift officer. We also, during the time when they were running this, we had three other detailed officers plus a sergeant up there. That's a lot of resources to dedicate. Long term, that's just not something we can sustain up. We've been running that often, and the stats continue to reflect problems are going on up there.
May I?
Okay. Actually, we're going to ask other questions.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions of the panelist?
Madam Chair.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Representative Matthews,
thank you.
Quickly.
Yep. Absolutely. Rarely does law enforcement get thanks, so I just want to take an opportunity to say thank you on behalf of this organization, but of course, you know, your response to the community's needs and the fine work that you're doing at the Bureau. Thanks very much, and thank the other officers as well, and nice work out there. Keep it up and stay safe.
Thank you, Representative Matthews.
Any other questions?
May I just respond?
Very quickly, because you're cutting into somebody else's time. Yeah, so.
30 seconds. If you look at the stats put out by the OLCC, you'll see that the majority of their undercover operations are IDs, historically. It wasn't until the Portland Police Department, and particularly Commander Luloff, working in conjunction with High Noon and with Representative Kotek, that they went in because they couldn't get the state agencies to do the job. They went in and made the arrests. We've been telling them that since 2008. They took the information, they verified the information, they made the arrests.
Okay. Oh. Thank you very much.
Just real quick, Madam Chair. I think one of the things I'm after is the fact that we're not supporting law enforcement the way we should be, and there should be lottery dollars going to help the City of Portland to deal with this issue. That's what I'm trying to get after, and you guys keep kind of covering up saying everything's fine when it's not fine. So as you're coming up here testifying, I need to know, are there enough 2 people on Hayden Island for 12 businesses or whatever it is to me doesn't sound like enough. I mean, we'll have three guys sitting outside one bar. We want it cleaned up, and you do it two or three times in a month, guess what? It stops really fast because people don't like getting arrested. Okay. There are not very many people.
Thank you very much. And I'm glad you did move to Oregon. We are an all-inclusive state. We do even let Yankees fans in.
I support the Seattle Mariners. Whatever you need.
Yes. By the way, the Yankees are coming here in June.
I know. I bought my tickets.
Thank you very much. We have about 5 minutes for four other people to speak. Tamara DeRid, Marianne Schwab, and Martin Slupkes. And if you could summarize what has not been said, and come on up and start going. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Hello. I'm Tamara DeRidder with Rose City Park Neighborhood Association. I'm the land use chair, and I'm a professional land use planner who donates her time. I just wanted to second the comments by the gentleman from New York who just testified. I do think funding for the police should be augmented by the lottery funds. And the real issue is clustering. We're not addressing that. And that is a real problem in our area since we have seven establishments, alcohol establishments with lottery within a three-block area. And that is located down on Cully and Prescott. So we've got just a number of these places popping up, not just at Borders. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
I'm Marty Slupikas. I'm a resident of Hayden Island, or at least I have a place on Hayden Island. And I'm on the High Noon Board of Directors, and I'm representing the Riverhouse Homeowners Association. I'm also a participant in the Stop Lottery Row. The issue... I have a master's in public administration. Big deal. I believe public administration is service-oriented. I also have a master's in business. That's profit-oriented. What's interesting to me is the Oregon State Lottery has had the opportunity and the regulations, as you will note in my written comments, to do what needs to be done. They had the authority to regulate, inspect, replace, remove video lottery machines if there was a problem. As Judge Kuffner mentioned, they've been bringing this information out to the Oregon State Lottery since 2008. Didn't work. How do we control this? Well, how do you determine what business is authorized to have a lottery license or a liquor license? Viability is throughout the regulation. How do you determine viability of a business? My suggestion in the testimony that I submitted is use state and federal tax returns based on one full year of operation to determine if an establishment is viable.
Because we do have your testimony, if you could just summarize.
Okay. Well, it's all in there. Financial responsibility, serving the public convenience, and locality is certainly an issue with Hayden Island. But the reality of it is cluster saturation licensing, and that's a state-issued mandate on Hayden Island. We're having that problem. Nobody, I think, minds going into a bar and playing the lottery or eating, but that is not happening. We have 12 businesses, and they're operating as a casino.
Thank you so very much. Any questions of the panelists? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, those are all the people we have signed up. Anyone else to speak on 2007? We're also going in to talk dealing with 2008. Have you signed up for House Bill 2007?
I believe so.
I called everybody up that was on there.
Well, it's not a chance
in
2008.
Yeah. Have you signed up?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I've traveled. I've come directly from the hospital. I'm a PA.
Okay. A now, we also have another bill to sign. What is your name, sir?
Stephen Carver.
Okay, I think.
The two bills are tied together.
Right. Actually, you signed up for House Bill 3256, which we have not talked about yet. We have not opened the hearing on it, okay? Okay, with that, I close the hearing on House Bill 2007 and open up the hearing on House Bill 2008. And I'm going to limit people to 3 minutes, and I will ask you to nicely finish when you're at the end of the testimony. First of all, in 2008, Ron Schmidt, Tracy Chapman, Roy, and if you could just add anything new to what your testimony is.
Madam Chair and Committee, I will keep it extremely brief, and I will say that we have a functional problem with OLCC in that we have...
If you could introduce yourself again for the record, please.
I am sorry. My name is Ron Schmidt. I'm a resident of Hayden Island. I am the chair of High Noon, the Hayden Island Neighborhood Network, the City of Portland recognized and authorized neighborhood association representing 2,800 residents on the island. We have a problem in that the OLCC is the sanctioning licensing agency that also is supposed to be the enforcement agency. They can do one, they cannot do both effectively. As a result, all of the enforcement, unless we really push them through political pressure, to come out in the middle of the night to do a walkthrough of the island, all of the enforcement drops down to the local law enforcement authorities. And the law currently does give the local law enforcement hardly any authority at all. We ask that you pass 2008 to put in some teeth so the local cities, the local police departments at least have some reason for being when it comes to liquor licensing. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Tracy Chapman, Roy, representing Hayden Island and the Board of High Noon. And I would just like to ask once again that you just take a look at everything and so that we could just make our neighborhood safer for families to come and reside, make it a wonderful place to other people in the state to come and to recreate and be safe and be able to walk around the island and have it be a wonderful place.
Thank you. Fine, thank you. Any questions of the panelists? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a very important tool that law enforcement needs. But for those of us who may have some concern about due process, would you consider an amendment that would provide that a judge would look at this before an establishment was shut down?
I'm not an attorney, and I'm not a legislator, and from sitting through two hearings, I'm really grateful that I'm not, and I have a great admiration for you. It makes sense to a common person.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Yeah.
Okay, next we've got Andy Smith, Teresa Marchetti, and David Jackson. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, Andy Smith for the City of Portland. With me today is Teresa Marchetti from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and David Jackson from the Portland Police Bureau. We're here in strong support of House Bill 2008. We view this bill as a three-step approach for dealing with problem establishments. Starting at the end of the bill, the first step really goes beyond the issue of problem establishments to all the decisions and policies that come out of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. The first step designates a seat on the commission for somebody with a background in public safety. Designating a public safety seat on the commission will not only bring the membership of the commission in line with the intent of the Liquor Control Act, but it will also result in policymaking that better balances public safety with the state's business interests. Step two of the bill deals with problem establishments on a preventative level. Under current law, before OLCC can intervene to address ongoing public safety hazards at an establishment, they first must prove a history of serious and persistent problems at the location. For these purposes, the statute is broken. Because in practice, it's nearly impossible for OLCC to meet the statutory threshold of serious and persistent in a time frame that makes any sense for addressing ongoing and preventing future public safety hazards from occurring. The final step of this bill deals with problem establishments when tragedy strikes. It would give a local police chief the authority to prohibit the ongoing sales of alcohol at an establishment in the immediate aftermath of certain violent crimes that are tied to the sale and service of alcohol at the establishment. It gives law enforcement an opportunity to work with the owner to identify the conditions at the establishment that led to the tragedy and to rectify those conditions so the tragedy doesn't strike twice. And with that, I'll turn it over to Teresa to talk about the issue of serious and persistent.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chair Daugherty and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in strong support of House Bill 2008. For the record, I'm Teresa Marchetti. I'm the City of Portland's Liquor Licensing Specialist. We feel that this bill would give the OLCC the authority that they lack currently to act in a preventative manner to avoid serious public harm. There are many situations at bars and taverns where they are experiencing escalating incidents involving crime and disorder, in which the agency's hands are currently just tied. We have 3,000 liquor license locations within the City of Portland, about 100 to 150, which are experiencing some sort of problem at any given time. We feel like this bill would provide a framework and guidance for when those problems reach an unacceptable level, where behavior has become so egregious that it warrants the oversight by the OLCC. This bill would allow restrictions to be placed on the licensee, providing an intermediate step to ensure that the licensee can regain control. The agency recently engaged in rulemaking to impose civil penalties where there are proven serious violations of allowing unlawful activity. However, that still does not allow the agency to restrict in a meaningful way the sale and service of alcohol that will correct the systemic issues that have led to the problems in the first place, and we feel like this bill corrects that. To give you a few recent examples, one establishment in Southeast Portland had 15 serious and 8 less serious incidents. These include incidents where patrons were actually found out passed out in the location and had to be taken to the hospital for alcohol poisoning, where police were harassed by up to 70 patrons for detaining an assault perpetrator, where someone was severely injured with a broken beer bottle. Management was approached formally on 4 different occasions, submitted 3 different voluntary control plans that were not followed, and only then a ticket could be issued. There's also another location where there were 24 incidents resulting in police reports in 11 months. 10 of these actually involved injury to patrons and employees. And the reports note the high levels of intoxication and also that the employees are really at a loss as to how to control their clients. There's another location with 15 incidents in a year's time. Absolutely. Where there were several times where patrons were taken directly from the location to detox. One incident in which officers actually observed security taking an individual outside who was throwing up and laying them on the sidewalk and leaving them there. These are just a few examples of the kind of escalation where management has lost the ability to control the location through some form of negligence or just not knowing what to do. You can imagine the frustration that we hear about neighbors who live and do business right next to these locations. We feel like the agency lacks currently the tools to address this in a meaningful way, and we feel like this bill would go a long way to directing that, and we urge your support.
Thank you very much. Mr. Jackson.
Good morning again, Chair Daugherty and members of the House and Business Labor Committee. Once again, I'm Officer David Jackson, the Portland Police Bureau Drugs and Vice Division. I'm here to testify on the City of Portland's behalf in favor of House Bill 2008, and more specifically around the issue of the 72-hour emergency closure of a liquor establishment. You've already heard from Annie Smith and Teresa Marchetti regarding the other important aspects of this bill. The 72-hour emergency closure is the final piece to this important bill. This aspect of the bill is the final tool when a location with serious or persistent problems at a liquor establishment has gotten someone seriously hurt or killed. Currently, OLCC and cities around Oregon do not have any means statutorily to immediately address problem locations and protect the community from an immediate threat to public safety. I just want to note that the vast majority of liquor licenses operate with no problems at all. We have no interaction with them at all other than when their initial application comes in. We do have some problems, and I'll just give you one quick example. 2012, we had a location, liquor license establishment, that had a large number of problems. They had a shooting in the parking lot, a lot of disturbance calls, a lot of fight calls. We had a lot of interaction with the ownership of that bar. The owner was taking limited responsibility for his actions, but we really didn't have any good tools to work with the owner on. Later on in the year, he had another shooting in his parking lot. The following night, he had a big bar fight in the parking lot. Some people got seriously hurt. As a result of that, the owner basically showed up on scene and said he had no knowledge that even a shooting had occurred the night before. Continuing in the investigation, there was only one employee working that night at the bar because the other was too afraid to even come back to work the following night after a shooting. The 72-hour time frame is essential because it allows a cooling-off period for the patrons, the employees, and the community after a tragic event occurs. It also is important because it allows law enforcement, OLCC, and the licensee an opportunity to review the location's current business practices and suggest operational changes that can benefit everyone. An important distinction is the closure is for a maximum of 72 hours. If the significant event is handled appropriately and the issues have been resolved that led to the critical incident, there's nothing preventing the city and the location from a shorter time closure. Thank you again for your time, and we're welcome to answer your questions.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions? Quick ones, because we have
just for the officer.
12 people to go through in 10 minutes.
Gotcha, but I need to know, the incident Friday night of the shooting and then Saturday of the bar fight, the parking lot fight, were they connected?
We have no knowledge whether they were connected or not. The patrons were different patrons.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Holvey?
I'll pass.
Okay, Representative.
Madam Chair, just one thing, Officer, in your comments, you said persistent, serious and persistent problems. Actually, I think the bill calls for a serious incident, so it would only take one incident.
Correct.
I just wanted to clarify that for the record.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Bill Perry.
Thank you, Chair Doherty. Members of the committee, for the record, Bill Perry with the Oregon Restaurant Association, Lodging Association. I handed in written testimony, so I'll kind of peruse it, or skip it. But if you've got the bill handy, basically, Speaker Kotak talked about she'd been working on these issues. Well, these are three different bills all put into one over the last three sessions. And so I'll skip the makeup of the commission because it's in my testimony. But there are, I think, some serious legal issues that are concerning to us, and Representative Witt touched on one of them. The first page is the bill from last session. And if you include C, which they've got all these crimes here, there's murder, rape, kidnapping, some of what I term major crimes, but C is assault. And basically there's bar fights all over the place, and people aren't ever charged with assault. And so by including it, it changes the dynamic pretty dramatically. Now, the other thing from a legal standpoint I want to point out is criminal charges are not filed usually for 2 weeks because you have to do an investigation on intent. So when they say in 24 hours they're going to present this information, no criminal charges are usually ever filed within 24 hours. So it adds a dynamic that makes this a little bit more problematic. In line 13, it talks about reasonable belief, where usually like search warrants and stuff, you do probable cause. So if you limit it to what I would call major crimes, you have, like what Representative Witt talked about, a judge review the facts and even address what I think the question was with Representative Matthews. Make some connection that you think a like crime is going to happen in the short term. Those are things that I think everybody can agree on to try to fix. That's why we generally dealt with this in the judiciary, where obviously there's more attorneys and everything else, but I don't know if anybody really likes spend more time with more attorneys, but I do think there's a time and place. No offense, Representative Burton.
No offense.
Now, when you get into the second part of the bill or the next page, this is where it really starts to get problematic. And I'm just in deference to time, if you look at line 11 and 12, okay, at the end of it, it says noise, disturbances, or unlawful activity, which means noise and disturbance do not have to break any laws, so they can put restrictions on establishments even though no laws have ever been broken. And you really start, and I'm just pointing out one, you start, and plus it talks about, I can't remember the other legal term, reasonable grounds for belief, which not an attorney, I think that's even a lower standard. But when you start to get into the rest of this bill, you start putting a lot of businesses in danger that have broken no laws. None of these things are happening in their establishment. They're happening outside. So you start to get really problematic and put a lot of people at risk, even though no laws have been broken. And remember, all this, like we talked about in the last hearing, the owner didn't do anything. It's a customer. And a customer after they left an establishment. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you very much for this. Very good. Any other questions? Thank you for your input on this and bringing this up. Okay, next we have Kathy Figley and Peter McCollum. And again, we're under a little bit of time crunch here, so if you could summarize your testimony, please.
Okay, we will do
thank
so.
Thank you very much.
And for the record, thank you for your courtesy, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kathy Figley. I'm the mayor of the city of Woodburn, and with me is Peter McCallum, who is the city council president. Woodburn has a history of problem establishments, like many of the other cities who've testified this morning. I would agree that most of our licensees are pretty trouble-free. The occasional ones seem to only lose their licenses or get under control when something dramatic happens. Our chief, I picked his brain as far as when have people lost their license. Well, the place that had a homicide and the bartender pulled the victim out into the parking lot so the party could continue for a while, they lost their license. And a place that, you know, persistently served minors eventually lost their license. But let me, rather than repeat myself and, you know, what we said in our written testimony, we support this bill because of the 72-hour option in extreme circumstances. We support it because of the requirement that there be a law enforcement professional on the commission, and we support it because we believe it gives some definition and some teeth to the OLCC if it chooses to meet its enforcement obligations and to local law enforcement if the OLCC fails to act. But let me just give you a few excerpts from the police report about an establishment whose name is not important, but it is in the city of Woodburn. Woodburn very seldom recommends denial of an application. We recommended denial because of a stack approximately 3 inches high of reports on violations from the applicant's existing establishment in Washington County. We recommended denial, so did the OLCC investigator. However, the OLCC apparently felt that it did not have grounds under current statute for denial, despite the likelihood from looking at the evidence that this the operator of Problem Establishment A might operate Problem Establishment B. It opened January 11th. It was overcrowded to the tune of almost 300 people. There was inadequate security. There was a large gang-oriented presence. Other gangsters came by in the parking lot. We had some fights. Eventually, things wound down and things were cleaned up. Next night, a gangster rapper performed. Again, the facility was overcrowded by close to 200 people. Again, issues with gang affiliated behavior, flashing signs, fights, and so forth. Fights in the parking lot, eventually.
If you could summarize, please.
Yes. January 18th, the following Friday, we would, had we had the ability to do the 72-hour closure, would have done the 72-hour closure. It was apparent when we were pulling all of the night shift from three adjoining agencies and having to call in help that this establishment was not being enforced and it needed to be addressed. We would have addressed it the night of January 18th. Instead, we had a 50-person riot in the parking lot. The first responders there to help people who were tased or pepper sprayed were not able to approach because of fears for their own safety. That is the kind of problem establishment we need to crack down on, whether it's the OLCC or local government. Again, I would say please give the OLCC the teeth to prevent this kind of activity. If not, let us at least take care of our communities. Thank you very much
for your testimony, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, any questions of the panelists? Thank you very much for testifying. Okay, next we have, he wanted to go last.
Oh, he did, that's right.
Helen Ying, Marianne Schwab, and Mr. Cuffinger again. And again, very, very briefly, because we've got 5 minutes to finish. Go ahead and start.
Good morning, Chair Doherty and committee members, for taking time to hear my thoughts about House Bill 2008 and why it is critical that this bill be given serious and thoughtful consideration.
If you could identify yourself, please.
My name is Helen Yee, I've been an educator for 30 years, a board member of O-Town Chinatown Community Association, a member of a task force reducing high-risk drinking in Monoma County, and a board member of We Can Do Better, and a member of Kaiser's Patient Advisory Council.
And if you could summarize, we have your written testimony.
Right. I'm asking for your support for House Bill 2008, a bill that protects communities from problem bars. Having been an educator in secondary schools for 30 years, I'm well aware of the impact of alcohol use and addiction for youth and their families. Being a community member that is active in addressing safety and livability issues, I have experienced, heard about, and witnessed terrible, tragic incidents that have occurred due to unsafe and irresponsible practices in drinking establishments. A recent incident involves my nephew, who was home for the holidays in December. He was knocked unconscious after leaving a drinking establishment in Old Town Chinatown and had to be transferred by ambulance to a hospital. Well, it's unclear what actually took place preceding to him being knocked out. It's clear that he had too much to drink and has, as with the party that was involved in the altercation with him. It's imperative that we as a state take action to improve the enforcement tools to protect the community from problem bars and taverns. House Bill 2008 will provide a tool to help OLCC to improve its ability to work with businesses and local government to address public safety issues more effectively. The time now is to act is now, and I hope that you will take action to help build safer and more livable communities in Oregon. Thank you
very much. Next.
My name is Mary Ann Schwab. I am. I wear many hats like Dr. Seuss, one of which my neighborhood association could not address this board because of the quick turnaround time, nor can the League of Women Voters. And currently I am serving on the OLC Second Advisory Committee, rulemaking for exterior areas of licensed establishments.
And if you could summarize your testimony, please. We're very, very short on time. Thank you.
I appreciate that. I implore Representative Whip that we get another study on this, that you, when you do invite people to the board, unlike this one with OLCC, of 42 people, stakeholders invited to serve on this committee, I was the only person serving on the committee for 95 Portland neighborhoods, the only one not on someone's payroll to sit there. So when you develop your committees, the person that puts the committee together already knows the end result. So I implore you to have the police officers there, to have neighborhood involvement with 95 representatives. I think Teresa would be a good representative if we can pull her away from all her paperwork. And also, Representative Thompson, you're right. This problem is in this building. OLCC is like a bunch of mushrooms sitting there. They can do nothing. It was tweaked. Your ORS was tweaked in 1999. As long as I don't have a felon and I sign a good faith, good neighbor agreement, which has no enforcement, they have to give anyone that license. The food carts is a really good example of that one. And the reason I feel such intensity and rage is that back in 1988, as a secretary, job placement, Madison High School, a parent was killed on the midnight shift in a convenience store. He left behind four kids, two in high school, of which I knew, and two in elementary school for $69. Out of that rage, we put together with Southeast Uplift, seven neighborhoods, a good neighbor agreement for convenience stores. We had them popping in. Gas stations were disappearing. 7-Eleven was coming in. Plaid Pantry was coming in. We wanted to make sure that no one walked into a robbery, that you didn't have the big cigarette ads, the beer ads three and four deep, so you could see that cash register so we wouldn't walk into a robbery. And that was at a time when we didn't have cell phones. We blocked the outgoing calls. No, we had outgoing, but you couldn't have incoming because we had drugs and alcohol. We really put together a good piece, and this is what they tweaked it on with the OLCC back in 1999 when a Representative Randy, Leonard was down here. And to his credit, he tried to fix it with time, place, and manner. It is a waste of time. I have to have a police officer show up.
If you could summarize, please.
That is it. We don't have the money in the police force with our cuts. Time, place, and manner is a waste of paper. When the mushrooms on OLCC say, oh, unless there's a police report, we can't address it. We have created this mess, Representative Thompson, and I implore each of you to try to fix it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And if I
much.
Sound a little intense, that's my Irish.
That's okay. That's all. No, if you stay there, we may have questions. Thank you, sir. Quickly.
Charles Kupner from Hayden Island. Very simply.
Take microphone.
I think I can speak loud enough, but...
Just in case.
The 72-hour emergency closure rule, to me, means nothing more or less than the fire department going in, seeing an overcrowding situation where it's going to be dangerous to all the patrons. They have the authority to close, if I'm not mistaken. A health inspector goes into a restaurant and sees rat... rat feces all over the place. I think for the health, safety, and the welfare of the customers, they have the power to shut it down emergency-wise. Let me give you an example. In an open meeting at OLCC, open meeting at High Noon, a resident stood up and said he saw five drug deals with a known drug dealer go down in a licensed establishment in Hayden Island where the bartender was the person who took the money and gave the stash, and the manager of the premise was there. If an undercover police officer was there, are you saying to me that they shouldn't have the 72-hour emergency shutdown, that that incident is not a real danger to the health, safety, and welfare of the neighborhood?
Okay. Thank you.
That neighborhood doesn't have money for attorneys, but we had an attorney sitting here saying that he represented four companies. He's a triple dipper.
Thank you very much. Quadruple dipper. Any comments? Any
it's
questions?
All about the jobs, right?
You look pondered, but go.
I am, Madam Chair. I'm sitting through this listening to a commission getting kicked all morning long, and they're not here to respond. And I want to tell you that I take a little exception to it, because I'm going to say that if they have the tools to do this, then we should be putting pressure on them to do it. There's a new commissioner coming into play now. There's the executive director. The governor has the ability to appoint a police officer to that commission now, and he hasn't done it. So there's a lot that you're trying to do within a law that, you know, the work group might be able to solve a great deal. So for me, I just want to be very, and try to be, and encourage everybody, and implore everybody, to use your words, to be respectful to one another in this process. I know we're frustrated. Everybody is. But we're not going to get to a solution if you're so frustrated that you're not willing to be respectfully in the same place and time manner.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
OLCC is here. We're going to have to dismiss the panel. We have more people to come. Very briefly, we're not going to take testimony if it's things that have already been said. But we have William Feldman. Okay, thank you, sir. Marty. Pardon? Thank you very much, sir. I can't read that. Martin Slopkes and Stefan Karlick. And is that everybody? That's everybody. Thank you very much. If you can go ahead and just start, please.
Let me be first. I'll be very brief.
And we still have two more, so go ahead, please.
My name is William Feldman. I came from Hayden Island this morning to this meeting at 8 o'clock in the morning, which is an odd time to plan a meeting that involves people who have to come from Portland to be here. And then I hear our testimony being cut short. I just want to say I have nothing more to say than what has been said, except that I think that these hearings ought to be done in an area logistically what is better for the people who are involved. It would be, and give us enough time to speak.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're not expecting these many people to speak, and that was the problem.
Salem is a long ways from Portland at 6 o'clock in the morning, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Move the capital of Oregon City.
Sir. Move the capital of Oregon City. Thank you. Representative from Oregon City.
I'm Marty Slopkes. I testified earlier.
If you have anything to add from before.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Section 3 in the House Bill 2008 talks about restrictions can be placed on the premises if there is a past history of or current presence of problems related to noise, disturbances, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they say at the premises, at other premises of the licensee, or at other premises under the same management. I recommend that you add the following to that. On the property owned by the landlord landlord on which the above-mentioned premises
are located. Sir, you need to bring that in as an amendment, if you have it written down, we will take that.
It's in there.
Okay, great, thank you.
Current federal state tax licenses filings should be included to determine the financial responsibility and the potential viability of the business. Pandering and prostitution should be added as to problems that are grounds for cancellation. And finally, the appropriate neighborhood should be given at least 90 days notice of a license application to determine public interest or convenience. We've got to issue and a definition of locality as it relates to Hayden Island, but I still think that 90-day notice to any neighborhood in the state would be appropriate.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. If you could identify yourself for the record and bring the microphone over.
Madam Chair, representatives, for the record, my name is Stefan Karlick. I live on Hayden Island. I'm a representative of the Homeowners Association. I'm on the Hayden Island Livability Project, and I'm on the High Noon Board. The only thing I want to add to this is to put it in perspective. The Homeowners Association see all three of these bills as overlapping, and one's dependent on the other. And to put it in perspective, there's currently one lottery machine for every 33 residents. You take out the disabled, the young, and the poor, and we're probably talking about one machine for every 18 able-bodied people on the island. We need to stop the saturation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate that. Any questions of the panelists? Thank you, sirs, very much for coming down. Tom Parker, Scott Winkles, and that'll finish it up.
Chair Doherty, committee. For the record, my name is Tom Parker. I'm with Alliance for Life. We're a nonprofit that fights substance abuse. And thanks for your time here. I think for a Christmas present, you should all buy yourself a timer.
We have a timer, and we're timing you.
And the seats drop into a shark pit at 3 minutes shark. just really to sum this up really quickly, this is the concept of why we're behind House Bill 2008. The OLCC has been given charge of supervising liquor establishments. They haven't been given the teeth to follow it up. It's not to pick on them. I know Representative Matthews is out of here. It's not to kick on anybody, but you need to give them clear rules. When we have a club like the Club 915 in Portland, 19 persistent problems, violence, fights, the only way they ever got shut down was when the bouncer was killed. You had the operator was afraid of his clientele, and nothing was being done. We couldn't shut them down. If you talk to any of your constituents, they would tell you, common sense would say, you're kidding me. There are a great number of bars that follow the rules, 95% of them. If you've got 5% that are these bad operators, they need to be shut down, and they need to be shut down now. As the one person said before, if you can get the health department to shut them down for rat feces, you should be able to get these two-legged varmints out of there as well. And then the other part, it is really time, beyond time, for the OLCC to have balance on the seat. For 30 years now, they've had a seat for the liquor industry and nobody for public safety, nobody for prevention, and you need to balance that. And that's my summation of what I have to say. Thank you for hearing this. You're all angels for getting up so early. I just would like to say, for those of us that have traveled so far, it would seem a little more fair if we were able not to be rushed at the end, because that's what we are called. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Winkles, and I think I can do this in a minute. The League is appearing in support of this legislation, and all we are simply asking for on the closures is that a police chief have the authority to temporarily close an establishment for 72 hours in the event there's a death due to a criminal act, a sexual assault, or a serious assault. This authority is weaker than what a health inspector or a fire marshal would have, where they can close for a longer period of time until a problem is resolved. That is what we were asking for, if there's a reasonable belief that there's a public safety threat moving forward. Additionally, I will also address the issue of a police officer on the commission. Having sat through several commissions, it is vital that we get a person who has a suspicious and skeptical nature on that commission to address issues like ghost licensees and someone who can ask the appropriate questions who understands the impact a problem establishment can have on a community.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the panel? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2008 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3256. Who are we calling up first? If you could do a summary very quickly, and we need to be out of here at 10.
House Bill 3256 allows licensees of the OLCC to enter into good neighbor agreements with neighborhood associations and local and or local governments, specifies effective compliance or noncompliance with agreement for purposes of commission proceeding to determine whether to suspend or cancel a license or impose a civil penalty.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to call up Stephen Carlick, Lucinda Carlick, and Jim Starup. Thank you very much. Okay, if you could. What is your name, sir?
Ms.
Thank you very much. Please, quick.
Go. Madam Chair, representatives, for the record again, my name is Stephen Carlick. You know all the boards I'm on. The Good Neighborhood Agreement, we really need to get that with from the owners. The owners are going to state that they're spending $30,000 a month on security. That's of their own making because they've created the problem. And now they're trying to smooth it over with the communities. The owners are also going to state that the crimes are not committed by the patrons, when in fact the police already stated that they are. We want to push for a single owner for a single license. Currently there's a single operator that has six licenses, and only one license can be jeopardized
can be jeopardized under the rules that we have right now. We would like to see one owner for one establishment and having one license in one location, not six. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Representative Frederick, who is bringing this bill to us, if he could. We have very little time, but please explain the bill for us and where you're coming from.
I will try to do that. Thank you, Chair and Chair Doherty. I'm Representative Lou Frederick, representing North and Northeast Portland, and I bring you House Bill 3256. This is an attempt to help cities, towns, and neighborhoods deal with the impact of alcohol sales in their midst. We know that there are some problems with our system of regulating alcohol sales, and I readily acknowledge that this bill deals with a symptom. Representative Thompson was mentioning earlier on another bill, these are symptoms. There's an inherent conflict in this bill. We have one agency charged with both regulating and marketing alcohol, but this bill doesn't try to go there right now, just so that you know. The conflict it does try to resolve is that alcohol retailers in residential neighborhoods have different goals as regards to their neighborhood environment, and neighbors have little to bring to the table when negotiations take place. Many neighborhood associations and other entities have tried formalizing compromises with proposed or continuing licensees through good neighbor plans or good neighbor agreements and other vehicles. What they have found, however, is that these agreements are simply unenforceable. The Oregon Liquor Control Commission does not recognize complaints of non-performance under these agreements, and it does not consider such non-performance when considering renewals. Neighbors experiencing adverse effects on neighborhood safety and environment find that local jurisdictions have no authority over liquor licenses. At the same time, the OLCC professes its own lack of authority to consider these effects because they're not in the statute that defines its authority to deny, suspend, cancel, or fail to renew a license. This leaves neighbors with no recourse. Good neighbor agreements have only have the good faith of the parties to hold them up, and that has been found repeatedly to not be enough.
Okay, if you could summarize, please.
I will. This bill allows parties in neighborhood agreements to see the terms that they've agreed to become conditions of the license. It adds substantial or persistent failure to comply with the terms of such agreement to the potential grounds for suspension or cancellation of a license. This does not give neighbors an advantage in negotiations. It merely gives them some standing to hold licensees to the terms they've already agreed to. This is my first take is that this could face more impediments to passage, and the potential for unintended consequences would need further research and exploration. But I believe that if all we do is solve the problem of unenforceable agreements, we've made some important progress.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Garlick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, representatives. My name is Lucinda Carlick, and I'm the president of HILP, Hayden Island Livability Project. And I simply want to say we support this bill.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions of the panelists? Okay, I'd just like to make a comment. I've also received information from Ash Creek neighborhood, which is in southwest Portland, and have a good neighbor agreement with a bar that came in literally in the middle of a neighborhood with no other commercial around that used to be a grocery store. And they strongly suggest that there's no enforcement, even though it's very good. The bar owners have been very good with meeting, but if there's anything that is violated, there is no enforcement whatsoever. So I know even Ash Creek neighborhood and the Crestwood neighborhood in southwest Portland agree with you. Thank you very much. Okay, Bill Perry and Mike Mills. And these two together. And Mary Botkin and
Melinda.
Oh, well, Mary, we'll bring you up later. Okay, thank you.
Bill Perry, Chair Doherty, Bill Perry with the Restaurant Lodging Association. I'll be very brief since I'll let Mr. Mills do most of the talking. But I do want to say that there are a lot of neighborhood or good neighbor agreements out there that are being followed. I think the example that you gave, Chair Doherty, is one of them, and I think 95% of them are worked out many times and followed by bars. I do think by putting a risk on this, that has a bigger chance of having people not sign good neighbor agreements than encouraging the last 5 to 10% to do it. I will say there's been unreasonable neighborhood associations and there's been unreasonable bar owners when you look at that last, you know, 5 or 10% that when they try to address it don't get done. But I do think there's going to be recommendations if you pass this bill for people not to sign good neighbor agreements as opposed to trying to get the last few in. So I think there's different ways to deal with this for other purposes. And I'd be happy to hand it over.
Mr. Mills. Thank you, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. Michael Mills, lawyer, private practice since 1972. I'm a big fan of good neighbor agreements. I agree with the possible repercussions of the passage of this bill that it will inhibit licensees from entering into good neighbor agreements. I'm also a big fan of statewide enforcement of OLCC laws rather than something relating to this particular neighborhood or this particular neighborhood. Under the provisions of this bill, if the licensee agrees to a good neighborhood agreement, it will expand their responsibilities and liabilities to more than what the OLCC can currently require. Right now, a licensee is responsible for the acts of their patrons inside the premises, in any areas that they control, and in any area in the immediate vicinity if it involves patrons, excuse me, and if the activity comes from the sale or service of alcohol. This would expand it to the neighborhood, which I assume is the geographical limits of the neighborhood association. Some licensees will have a small neighborhood association. Some may have a larger neighborhood association. They will be responsible for adverse impacts from the operation of their business within that geographical area. The term adverse impacts from the operation of their business also expands their present liability from what the OLCC requires. Adverse impacts from the operation of the premises does not relate necessarily to the sale or service of alcoholic beverages, which OLCC laws require. It could be nothing more than customers who have not had anything to drink but came and drank coffee and played the lottery, roaring their cars away at 1 o'clock or 12 o'clock, and that could be termed an adverse impact. One of the biggest problems is the requirement or the possibility of the requirement of mediation or binding arbitration. Questions about that. How is the mediator or arbitrator chosen? Who bears the expense? Does the licensee have all the hearing rights that they now have in a contested case hearing in an arbitration? In Oregon, an arbitration award is, for all practical purposes, non-appealable. And if a licensee is forced to participate in arbitration because of this particular bill, I think that they give up their rights to a contested case hearing in many cases and no effective right of appeal to the Court of Appeal. And last, at the present, the OLCC has to prove a history of serious and persistent problems at a premises before moving to cancel or not renew. And under this House bill, the quantum of proof is substantially or persistently fails to comply with the terms. And I think that's a different standard of proof also. So all in all, I think that it will inhibit good faith negotiations and entering into good neighbor agreements because of the added liability and exposure the licensees will have that is not present under current OLCC laws and rules. Thank you for
Thank
your
you
time.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the panelists? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we have Ron Schmidt, Ken Peterson, Rick Silk, and Chris Lopez. And Chris will just pull up a, or whoever can pull up a chair. Thank you.
Good morning again, Chair and Council. My name is Ron Schmidt. I am Chair of High Noon, the Hayden Island.
Hold on just a moment. They did get permission to use a visual aid. I just wanted to let the audience know.
Oh, okay.
We usually don't allow them.
Are you going to use that?
Okay. Go ahead.
We are in support of this bill for the good neighbor agreements. From our personal experience, is the good neighbor agreements with good neighbors is something that's easily gone into contract. Those operations that really don't want to be a good neighbor in the community will use it only as a tool to delay dialogue or to get what they want. Our personal experience is that we spent months and months and months of time of negotiation on certain good neighbor agreements. There was a governmental committee meeting that was coming up on a Friday. We started getting phone calls and voicemails saying they agreed to everything that was in the good neighbor agreement that had been talked about for months. The following Monday, when it was found out that the committee went against us, we got voicemails at that point in time that was never mind. We really believe that the Good Neighbor Agreement is an agreement. It is a tool that can be used, but it does have to have teeth, and we feel that this bill is critical for the Good Neighbor Agreement to be a tool that's useful at all. Thank you for your time and your effort.
Thank you.
Sure.
Next.
Good morning. My name is Chris Lopez. I'm the president of Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods. We are one of the seven Portland-sponsored neighborhood coalition, neighborhood association coalitions. We represent 12 neighborhood associations in inner, north, and northeast Portland, about 28,000 households. And our board of directors last night unanimously endorsed House Bill 3256 for the reasons that we've previously heard. It puts some teeth into the law, yes, but most importantly, it gives neighbors a voice. Right now, businesses enter into a good neighbor agreement. They have the ribbon cutting and the balloon weekends, and 6 months after the fact, it's like, well, we really can't live up to it now. This will hold them to what they agreed to. It's not a perfect bill, but it is a start, and it is something that gives our neighborhood associations a part in the process. That's the most important piece to us. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Next.
My name is Ken Peterson. I am the land use chair for the Grant Park Neighborhood Association. I am here to testify also in support of House Bill 3256. I'd like to thank Representative Frederick for introducing it. There are two things that I would like to say. Grant Park has successfully negotiated good neighbor agreements with two grocery stores that are in our neighborhood. And there's a provision in the bill on lines 26 and 27 that caused me some concern as a retired judge, and this is the sentence that contains the statement that there is a rebuttable presumption that the licensee has complied with the terms of the agreement. A good neighbor agreement is essentially a contract, and there should be no presumption that either side has or has not complied with the terms. It should be based on the facts as they are presented. It does occur to me, based on some of the comments that have been made today, that there needs to be both a carrot and a stick approach to getting people to enter into negotiations for good neighbor agreements, because right now there's not that much of an incentive to do so, and there's not much of a penalty for failing to do so. And I suggest that deleting that sentence and inserting a simple change.
Sir, because what you can do, I would suggest that you go to Representative Fredericks, who was the drafter of the bill, to go through and give me suggestions also.
Well, Madam Chair, this would be very short and very quick, and I will be within my time limit, I'm quite sure. To substitute the statement, compliance with the provisions of a valid and lawful good neighbor agreement shall constitute prima facie entitlement to yearly license renewal by an existing licensee. I think that simple statement would induce people to negotiate, and it would also give them a benefit, but it would not harm the efforts of homeowners associations.
Thank you. And as I say, these need to be go to also to Representative Frederick.
I will submit that.
We don't put in the amendments, but thank you very much. Good information.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rick Sills. I'm a native Portlander, and I've come down to testify as a neighbor. I've brought in, and I want to thank Madam Chair for allowing me to present this poster. This poster represents a sidewalk on the left, and a gentleman is passed out drunk on the sidewalk. That sidewalk is on Northeast Schuyler. Northeast Schuyler is one block away from Beverly Cleary School. This picture and many others, similar pictures, were taken by a neighbor. This particular picture was taken 15 minutes before the students at Beverly Cleary Grade School were let out. That's 700 students, second through eighth grade. And the person taking the photo, of course, used his discretion and did not include school children stepping around this gentleman. As I said, this is a very significant problem in this neighborhood, and initially there were stores selling very cheap, 40-ounce cans of high alcohol content to transients, and they refused to enter into a good neighbor agreement. Eventually, this matter came before the commission on October 25th of 2012. Judge Peterson was representing the Grant Park neighborhood and requested that the commission incorporate any of the kinds of provisions that the stores had refused to agree abide to into the license, and the commission refused and said on the record that good neighbor agreements were not enforceable. And I believe that in part that was the conceptual moment when neighbors realized these things need to be enforceable. And it was only because of the good offices of Judge Peterson that he was able to go to these recalcitrant businesses and convince them that if they all together entered into good neighbor agreements, unenforceable, together, that it would benefit them. And then they in fact did. But they're still unenforceable, and we would not. And so I support this bill wholeheartedly, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the panelists? Okay, thank you very much. And the last three we have, Melinda Merrill, Tamara, I can't read your last name, and Mary Botkin. You can go ahead and start.
Good morning, Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Barton, members of the committee. My name is Melinda Merrill. I'm the Director of Public Affairs for Fred Meyer Stores. And I'm here today to ask you to consider not passing 3256. I think after sitting here for the last 2 hours and hearing what I've heard, it perhaps needs to be reworked just a little bit. I have great empathy for the residents that are here and who just need their state to help them make their neighborhood more livable and safer. But I think the problem here is that right now it sucks in everybody. I come at this from a little bit of a different point of view. We have good neighbor agreements all over our market. We operate in Oregon, Idaho, Washington, and Alaska. And we have good neighbor agreements and alcohol impact area agreements in all four of those states. And sometimes it's just the neighbors that come in and talk to us. The gentleman from Grant Park just did this a couple of months ago with us. And he had to be very persistent. I will give him that. And it takes compromise on both sides. Nobody can be bullheaded about it. But there is precedent that these work. And we enter into them in good faith. We take them very seriously. And if we're being irresponsible, if we're selling to visibly intoxicated people, if we're not doing anything to prevent theft, then there are other mechanisms in place to have our license suspended or canceled. But I just would ask that it be reconsidered and perhaps not pass this time, but be reworked so that it does give some of these residents the tools they need, but also doesn't punish those of us who have been doing this for years and taking it very seriously. And if this passes in its current form, I'm not sure how we could enter into another agreement just because of the uncertainty and the capricious action that it opens us up to the way it's written. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mary Botkin. I'm here today representing the, I think somebody referred to them as mushrooms, the folks who work at OLCC. Number one, let's just be clear. Our members who do the enforcement work for OLCC do not have the authority to arrest and detain anybody. They can write a ticket. They can write a citation. They can file a complaint. They don't have the right to shut down a bar or to arrest a patron or a bar owner. So, having said that, we are not here asking for that authority, nor are we encouraging you to look at that. We're just saying, let's be clear about what our members can and cannot do. And while I have a lot of sympathy for the Hayden Island group that is here today, we don't have any ability to shut down those facilities. We can recommend it to the commission, and the commission is the only body that has the authority to close a facility. So that being said, the Good Neighbor Agreement bill, it works great for Portland, because Portland has an active Office of Neighborhood Involvement. They authorize good neighbor agreements, and they have homeowner associations. We do not have homeowner associations and homeowner activists in every community in Oregon. We are a statewide agency. What works in Portland may not work in LaGrande. It may not work in Pendleton or in Lakeview. So we need to be really cautious about how we write the bill, how we modify the bill, and how we expect our members to respond to the legislation. Right now, this afternoon at 1 o'clock, I'll be going down to Ways and Means, and I'll be testifying on the fact that we're going to lose almost 50 positions at OLCC, many of which are enforcement and inspections. So, you know, that's the problem.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, and we actually are 1 minute over, so
okay,
I'm going to really limit you.
Can't talk backwards.
Thank you so much.
Okay. My name is Tamara DeRitter. I am the land use chair for Rose City Park Neighborhood Association, and we held a general membership meeting last night and unanimously supported this bill. And I just want to second the statements by the Grant neighborhood, as well as I wanted to add my concern that this would take away this as a tool, because businesses would then feel threatened. So I would like for you folks to look into that a little bit further to make sure that the language is clean, that we're not putting the businesses at risk, because the intent is not to let neighborhoods run roughshod over these businesses. Also, I would like to add the tool to OLCC where they may require a good neighbor agreement as a condition of their license, because right now they don't have that tool. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the panelists? Okay, thank you very much. Seeing no one else, I close the public hearing on Bill 3256. Thank you very much. And I also adjourn the meeting of the House Committee on Business and Labor. Thank you.